Welcome to 0 to 1, the podcast for aspiring entrepreneurs who want to start but don't know where to begin. We are Jonathan and Gary, founders of Colleague, a company bringing AI into businesses, and Matteo, a Columbia student passionate about entrepreneurship. Here, we break down strategies, mistakes, and successes to help turn your ideas into action.
Hello, everyone. In this latest episode of 0 to 1, we have the honor of hosting Bernard Acetuno, aka Bernardo, co-founder and CEO of Stack AI, a leading AI enterprise startup. We are going to talk about a lot of things today, but especially about the current and future state of AI, what Stack AI does, and get to know Bernardo's story. Hello, Bernardo. How is it going?
Hello, doing great, doing great. A pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting.
Well, thank you for accepting the invite. So first, can you present yourself for people that don't know you yet?
Yeah, absolutely. Hello, everybody. My name is Bernard. I'm the co-founder of Stack AI. You know, I can take a look at Stack AI. Stack AI, we have a platform that allows companies to design their own AI agents in a way in which they can connect to like their specific data sources, tools, and do so in a way that is secure and adaptable to like the requirements of the enterprise, of their enterprise. Before founding Stack AI, I did my PhD at MIT, where I studied computer science. I've been doing AI for the past decade, since 2012. And been going through all the hoops and iterations of it, from computer vision to planning algorithms, reinforcement learning. Before doing my PhD, I had a short stint in Facebook AI research, where I worked in reinforcement learning and visual transformers in the early days of it. So it's very exciting to see how the field has evolved and where we are today. But yeah, very nice to be here.
So many things to talk about. So you know you're Venezuelan. Can you tell us more about it and where you come from, your background, and like deep down, has there always been like a Bernardo that wanted to start a company in Venezuela and Caracas, or did it just come along the way?
I mean, since day one, I feel like I will say I'm an entrepreneur as much as I'm an engineer and a person that really likes building products and selling them and then distributing them more than kind of like someone that likes to begin businesses. But I always kind of like found this passion on designing cool products and sharing them with others as an engineer. And as a maker, I grew up in Venezuela. I actually didn't grow up in Caracas. I moved to Caracas when I started college, but I grew up in a smaller city called Boconó and then Mérida. See, like you see from Mérida. And when I moved to Caracas, I essentially started my studies at computer science. I stayed in Venezuela as a student during probably the toughest years of the country, when the situation was very bad. A lot of people were leaving the country to different places. You know, across the globe, and we're not talking about the Venezuelan crisis, but it was pretty tough for a lot of people. And instead of me leaving to the US to do my undergrad, I lived like other countries where I could have studied, I decided to stay in Venezuela and do my undergrad. Back there, you know, I pretty much had to learn a lot of things on my own, from computer science to algorithms to machine learning. That's how I started doing research pretty much on my own, on my bedroom. And that's how I started kind of like building the foundations for learning algorithms. And The first big kind of like products I built and stuff were around those days, you know, like first of all, going and distributing kind of like small interfaces for managing documents for law firms, you know, like I was doing that in Venezuela initially, all the way to my first startup, which I started with two friends from college back in 2017, which was a kind of like a payments company for people that wanted to use stable coins to pay for services and goods in stores in Venezuela. That was you know, those were both failed attempts. You know, they were a lot of fun. I learned a lot from it, but kind of always left me with the desire of like taking a proper shot once I was in the right ecosystem with the right people. And coming to the US, you know, afterwards gave me that opportunity.
So did you always knew that you wanted to end up in the US? Like, did you have the American dream, or it was more you applied to many masters and you just ended up in MIT?
Yeah. Good question. Yeah, so I always knew I wanted to be a scientist. I always knew I wanted to like devote all the time to be a scientist. When I finished my undergrad, I already had done a significant amount of research. And I knew that in my field, at least, which at the time was like planning, robotics, and machine learning for reinforcement learning, most of the exciting work was coming from the US. There were some cool things coming from Europe, you know, but it was very counter-space scenarios. And just the amount of resources you have in the US would compared to other places were unmatched. The professors I was the most excited about were in the US, the opportunities to work with other companies were in the US. So just naturally I fell in with the desire to be here. That doesn't mean there's no good places in Europe, there's great universities in England, there's great universities in there's great universities in Germany, in Switzerland, in France. So there's always opportunities there. But for what I wanted to do, which was just to do a PhD, go on, explore many parts of the areas of machine learning, optimization algorithms, and reinforcement learning, I knew I would have a better time here in the US. And when I applied to programs, not to masters, to PhDs, the professors I knew I wanted to work with, the labs I wanted to work with, were all here. And that's how I ended up here, unnecessarily.
Now, especially the US is a place that has a lot of resources, financial resources to invest into AI and technology because most of the companies are there. About that, I know you worked at Meta for a brief stint. Can you tell us more about your experience there and as well as the AI innovation coming from this company? What makes this place so special?
I would say though that the lab I was very talented. I worked in Meta in Facebook AI research and now Meta AI. Today, Facebook AI research biggest product is Llama. It's basically the place where Llama was born. It was a great place. The idea was that I was pitching when I joined is that Jan LeCun was trying to build like their own Bell Labs in Meta, where you could have like a sufficient freedom to do whatever you wanted and get results to whatever you wanted. And I really liked that idea because as a scientist at the time, I wanted to do some reinforcement learning or some planning algorithms, and I wanted to like try something, some optimization algorithm or some new learning pipeline for some particular reinforcement learning task. And probably if I had joined Amazon or Google to work anywhere else, I wouldn't have the chance to do that. So I was very appealed by that. And that freedom led to like the development of a lot of breakthroughs. It's it, the reason, particular research I did was very scoped reinforcement learning. It was very scoped a very specific problem on like visual planning and how analyzing video can allow you to learn visual planning and from there apply that with differential simulators. You can look at the papers and research. You can go to my Google Scholar and see them. But more specifically, that reinforcement learning work at the time was just part of many projects that allow people to explore the different components of what makes a good machine learning AI pipeline that eventually gave us a transformer and eventually gave us the tools to build the LLMs we have today. I guess I would say that a lot of the people I see that come to begin startups out of this lab are people who were given enough freedom and speed to kind of like deliver on what they wanted on their goals and now are looking to make it into a bit something more tangible. So that's what I've seen a lot of.
Okay, very interesting. So you worked at Meta while you were still doing your PhD, if I understood correctly, right? And so when you finished your master degree, you applied directly to YC, or what was the transition between your master and the next step, which, from my understanding, was straight away entrepreneurial.
After 2 years in the PhD, which is not a master's, a PhD,
PhD, sorry, yeah.
it's a 5 years program, so again, it's very different. But after a while, me and my best friend from the PhD, we both knew that we, for a while, had long wanted to bring something more tangible as well into the ecosystem of, the industry. Both of us became very close after COVID, mostly because it was like we were neighbors and we would see each other very often. And we both had very similar interests in the algorithms, in computer science, in entrepreneurship. And we both kind of like agreed we would be good to begin something together. So we decided to kind of like team up to launch something. And we spent about a year trying things not very seriously, some computer vision projects, some data optimization projects, and more seriously, 6 months before finishing our PhDs in June 2022, we decided to seriously incorporate the company, go and work on it full time, got almost have a full work on it seriously, and we came up with the idea of building a tool that could help teams more easily train natural language processing and computer vision models by more easily curating data sets for that. And then tracking the task, kind of like the MLOps pipeline of the day. We were working on this on this platform, and we were just reaching out to people. And we managed to get our first customer for that product around September 2022. After we got that first customer, and like we was like honestly like a startup that needed that was looking for a product like this and was brave enough to pilot what we were building, we decided to like double down on that product, kind of like, okay, let's make the best NLP training algorithm and the best NLP data set optimization algorithm. Algorithms. So we worked on that, and we with the traction we had, because we got a couple more clients out there on that same motion, we decided to apply to Y Combinator. We applied, we got interviewed, and the application is quite simple. You just fill a form online. It takes like 10 minutes if you know what you're doing. And after you fill, you submit it, we got interviewed by the partners, and we got accepted. We had already raised some funding from friends and family, from like a few kind of like pre-seed funds and other people. And with that, we said, okay, we're ready to go. We can get started. Let's graduate. So we said, okay, we have to graduate first. Let's kind of like call our PhD advisors, what we need to do to graduate, whatnot. But we already were kind of on track to do so. So we finished our degrees in December 2022. We took like a week off, not even a week off, like a week of just packing stuff. And then we moved to San Francisco and we started working on the company. Right after, it was when we can decide to pivot the business and become turning into what Stack AI is today.
Great story. So you applied with your original idea and you pivoted during YC. Can you tell us like what was the process from the origin getting like applying with the original idea to pivoting?
Yeah, it was actually quite straightforward. We had a few customers already at that point that we knew were building the assets for their business and for their models. And it was just obvious to us that the more that people bring these enterprises, they kind of like the more they try to bring these foundational models to their business, the least they will need to train their own data sets, the least they will need to like train their own models. So, but rather connect the data to the model itself. So around like after like a month in YC, I'm working with our first guy who said, hey, it probably would be very helpful if instead of giving them the data to like fine-tune a language model or to like train a classification language model, instead give them the tools so that they can connect their APIs from their knowledge bases, their internal tools, like their CRMs or whatnot, and the systems of record to a language model so they can take actions on that and, you know, start kind of like giving resources on that. This was the beginning of AI agents. Back then, they weren't called AI agents. It was called data pipelines with LLMs. But anyway, we said, hey, this orchestration of language models with different tools will be very powerful. So we decided to build a product around that. In February 22nd, 2023, I remember the day exactly, we made the first commit for the no-code interface that was that we could do that. There wasn't really anything alike in the market. The closest thing for us was Scratch, the software for making code, learning how to code. They said, okay, let's try to copy that interface. And with that, with that in mind, we launched the first version of the product. And the first thing we did was reach out to our existing customers. Hey, are you interested in trying this? Right away, they were interested, like, hey, I want to see that. I want to see that. And from there, they got our, we got our first traction. Funnily enough, our first product, our first customer for this new product came from a WhatsApp group of kind of like YC founders, where someone said, hey, I'm trying to use a vector database to classify websites. Can anybody help me? I reached to a guy's WhatsApp, like, hey, I'm a YC founder also. I can help you do this. I have a product for that. Let's talk. I had a phone call with the guy for like 10 minutes and told him, hey, we can do this. It's gonna be a $500 per month. Are you down? And he's like, hey, let me think about it. And I said, no, we're gonna help you. And if the feature is not there, we're gonna code it. So we sat with him right away. We met, we had a meeting. I sent him the contract. That afternoon, he signed, and we got our first customer for that product. And I am, it was a matter of looking for other innovative people that wanted to build some, they wanted to use language models that were willing to take the risk on these features. And slowly with that, we started bringing more and more clients.
What kind of company
Okay.
was it? What was the first customer?
Yeah, so that you can see on our website, it's Barros. It's actually a company that they do marketing analytics. They can, you know, they help you understand kind of like how different ads and data are, how different brands are performing. And they need an assistant to like easily go to a website, scrape it, and based on what's scraped, categorizing one of like 300 categories. You know, back then there were like vector databases where you could, I mean, there were, but it was very hard to work with a vector database to like categorize examples or to like build patterns with that. So with us, they build a pipeline where they will put the website, they will scrape it, they will pass the text to a language model. Then they will like summarize that, look in a vector database, what categories are most similar, and then from there, get the best categorization. And that they still use that workflow today a couple thousand times per week. So yeah, I would
Wow.
say it's despite being our first customer, it's been one of the most active ones we had, even today.
And do you believe you would have pivoted that fast without doing YC? Or Is it thanks to YC that you decided straight away that the original idea was maybe not the right one?
I don't think YC was really the catalyst. I think YC gives you a lot of very good advice. Like the partners who work within YC give you a lot of very good advice. But the advice was natural. You listen to your customers and think, hey, is the market really going to need this product that I'm building, or do they really need this? Are they really getting value out of it, or are they really trying to get something else? And for us, it was pretty obvious, like, that fine-tuning language models at the time was still too early of a problem. And it wasn't clear if you could like actually gain value by fine-tuning a model with some search amount of data beyond what you will get out of connecting the language model to data. So for us, it's quite a logical conclusion that we had to pivot. And of course, YC encouraged, you know, when we told this recently to our YC partner, they in right away told us, well, you know, try something new. And it was kind of like a stage pivot. We didn't kill our previous product right away because we had customers for it. That's the thing. When you have customers already, then there's a lot of friction that like, cannot move forward. But we slowly transitioned out of that into like the current version of Stack AI. And since then, it's, you know, remained very consistent. We just saw people want this product. People are signing up to try it. People are booking meetings with us. There's no way we need to like go and do this for sure.
And just before to get into what Stack AI does, I wanted to ask you about YC. Can you go through maybe, you know, the environment, the YC environment? And I know a lot of people right now are doing YC. Most of them are building AI solutions, AI products. So can you tell us what it is like to be part of this environment, how you guys share ideas and you make progress with your product and your customers?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So very good question there, in the sense that YC, it's a very invigorating environment. Let's say, but even we did, we were locked in a place with like 200 other companies, and we will easily see their progress right away. Now, YC has a very interesting philosophy where it's not like you are in a classroom or something. Like you really are just, they're just telling, you just joined this program, they fund you, and they tell you, look, get an apartment with your co-founder, live together, work all day long. Every Monday, we're going to meet with you for 30 minutes, see how you're doing. Every Tuesday, we're going to do a talk on Zoom so you can meet some previous founder. Every Wednesday, you're going to meet with a group of other five startups that are similar to you in a similar stage to like see how they're doing, see what they're trying. Every Thursday, it's going to be like some sort of event in a bar where you're going to get drinks with a lot of other founders. We're going to be like 60 other people, and that's it. So most of the time, you're just working on your company all day. And then you have a little bit of time to meet to get feedback from them. But that's very helpful because what you do is that they tell you, why don't you try these three things? You spend the entire week working really hard on these three things. Then you meet with a group of other five stars who are trying similar things to see what's working, what's not working. And sometimes you see some of them succeeding really quickly on something they try. And you have to say, wow, these people are making really good progress. And, you know, we are still here stuck. Okay, let's get back. Let's see what they try and iterate from it. And it really pushes you on. To be there, to be more demanding of yourself and to be much more ambitious on how you're delivering your platform, the platform. So that I really appreciate about YC. The advice we got, you know, you get advice from two or three different YC partners, which sometimes may contradict themselves, sometimes it can be very different. So you need to like understand where they come from, what's their advice. But there are always people I respect. Everybody I gave that we work with in YC are people that have succeeded in startups in the past in doing all sorts of things, from you know, doing like their own APIs for search, from doing banks and neobanks, from doing you know, like a different apps for payroll and payments. So these people have built unicorns already, and like the fact you have five people like that giving you advice is really powerful, and it's very hard to find in other venture capital firms or anywhere else.
Interesting. And from that point, when you started Stack AI, so Stack AI is the enterprise AI agent deployment platform for companies. Am I right? So what's like for you your vision with Stack AI? Can you share with us your vision? And so since like the idea that pivoted that initially pivoted in at YC 2 years ago, what has changed so much in the last 2 years? And can you describe to us what's an AI agent? Because everyone's talking now about AI agents, but no one really knows like what is it exactly, and how does that integrate to Stack AI and your vision long term?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So AI agents are basically a new category of software. So it's not surprising that nobody really knows what it is. And many people refer to different things as AI agents. I'm gonna give you my take of what is an AI agent from like kind of like a more global perspective. It's similar to the take of Andre Karpathy, who, has been in the world of AI for a while. But the idea is that an AI agent, in my perspective, is any system that uses at its core a language model as an engine to orchestrate how, in order to complete a task, it's going to interact with a set of tools, let's say APIs it can call to store data or retrieve data, a set of knowledge bases, systems where it can retrieve knowledge in order to inform its task, and then perform actions with it in order to execute and complete a task. And of course, and store the history of what task it has performed in order to perform a better, in order to complete its task. It's funny because this actually is quite similar to the way that computers are designed, or like this is CPUs are designed, where like they receive an instruction, they fetch it from like the list of instructions available, then they look at the memory, then they'll see what operation has to be done, they do the operation, store it in memory, and then go to the next step. So language models do something like can be used for something for a system of this same architecture, and that's what an AI agent is. To put it on more concrete in more pragmatic terms, if you have a system where a language model is giving tasks to for researching a company, seeing how it compares to our company, and then storing what does that look like into a Google Sheets, you have an agent that, as a knowledge base, has our documentation, and as a tool that it can use, it can search the web, and then it can execute an action for adding rows to Google Sheets, and then a language model system can achieve that. That's the way that we interpret our agents, and what we have is a platform where you can take this construct that I have delineated a moment in the past few seconds and build it yourself in a no-code fashion in order to design an AI agent and then deploy it as a tool that can run it automatically with a different set of user interfaces.
What's the difference, main difference between the Stack AI and, like, let's say Zapier or other automation platforms that now integrated LLMs to deploy those kind of new AI agents?
Yeah, so we're not an automation platform, really, so it's different. We are an internal tool builder because what we allow companies to do is to build custom software that behind the scenes uses an AI agent to complete tasks. What does that mean? If you go to Stack AI today, you'll see that the first thing you have to decide is what do you want to build your agent to be like? Do you want it to be a chat interface? Do you want it to build a sort of form or some sort of dashboard? And within that dashboard, what's the logic behind? If you have a system that, for instance, processes invoices, what you want to really do is have an interface where someone loads a document with an invoice with perhaps some other data, submits it, and then after that happens, an AI agent receives a document, extract those OCR in it, extract information from it, looks at the database of existing employees of the company, see if it matches. If it matches, then goes, sends it to another language model to structure and update to the database, and then submits an update to the database of the company. That would be our workflow, and that would be what we call an AI agent. This is a very different paradigm from most other automation platforms because in here, there's a user interface in the middle through which employees of the company will interact with the agent, while systems like Zapier or Make.com are going to be focused on building background automation systems that every time that some event happens, let's say you receive an email, we'll do something about it. We'll notify you in Slack or would go and push something to Airtable. Which is what they specialize on, and they're very good at that. We use them in Stack AI for that kind of things. But if you want to build an internal tool your employees can use to automate a business process, which has multiple steps, requires retrieving knowledge from a particular source and from a user through an interface, and then operating with that knowledge, that's where we kind of fit in there as a builder.
There are so many different use cases you mentioned. How do the companies you work with find the best use cases to solve their problems? Because I feel there are so many different applications, but they might have limited resources. So how do you guide them into the most impactful application of your solution?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the application of our solution is really the application of AI in their operations. What we encourage our customers to think about when they're normally custom companies are quite creative on how they can use AI generally, but what we do encourage them a lot is to find what business process for them is either very manual and very expensive, let's say in compliance or in legal or in HR. Or find which process is really a blocker for your business to grow. Sometimes it may be auditing, sometimes it may be some process of support, and say from that process, outline it very well into steps and then map it to an AI agent. And what we normally will do is that they will realize, oh, we have this process in HR that relates to, as I described before, receiving invoices for refunds for the company and verifying that they are valid with our database. And that they probably will have hundreds of employees offshore or anywhere doing just that, or that may be blocking them from employing more people. And we'll tell them, okay, just automate that with an AI agent, and that's perfect. That's a perfect use case. And anything that is related to doing data structuring, doing classification of data, or managing knowledge are the best places to put AI applications there. Either as an assistant that can train you or the support, which is managing knowledge, or assistant that can go and retrieve a document, extract key information, and then update it to a database, which is data extraction, or for this data classification and summarization, where you may want to, let's say, write a report giving three documents and an audio recording from an employee on the field. You may want to automatically write a report. So those are the kind of fields where we see AI as being successfully deployed.
Okay, very interesting. And for which companies do you believe your product is the most useful? And you talked a bit about data privacy earlier, so I will also be interested to understand more also why using Stack AI is better for this.
Yeah. So and what we found is that companies that are very operationally heavy and who have a very intense back office, which is very much a blocker for their operations, are the ones that need AI the most today. So think about banks, think about construction firms, think about civil engineering firms, think about architecture firms, think about hospitals. These places have a very core business proposition. Let's say hospitals is doctors, but a huge back office of operations that go behind it in order to like manage payroll, manage invoices, manage applications to grants, manage training of staff, manage support desk. And in that operation, really you have all these bulk of processes, which really are not critical, are not the core of the business, but which are very much a clock for the growth and operation of the business. So those are the best places to bring language models. And naturally, that those are the customers that we have seen use Stack AI the most, are customers that are banks or logistics firms or healthcare providers are the ones that need these kind of automations the most. And the ones that, like, as soon as they get something that works, deploy the fastest to hundreds of operations per day, hundreds of thousands of operations per day.
And regarding the data privacy, is there an advantage using Stack AI compared to other solutions or?
Yeah, well, so Stack AI is a platform that is designed out of the gate so that you can choose how do you want to use it, where do you want to send your data, and how do you want to host it. So let's say if a company contracts with us tomorrow, they're going to have to use language models that are only hostable on their servers. So for that, just by nature of that, they cannot use OpenAI, they cannot use Anthropic, they cannot use Google, but they can use Llama, they can use Mistral. So we offer them the option to bring those models. Second of all, they cannot host data online, so they're going to need to have a local storage integration. So we'll connect to like their storage buckets or allow them to manually upload files or manually connect to like their local database in Postgres. So we give them a lot of flexibility to how do you want to run the platform and host it so that you have all that systematic control. Or if you have systems that have a particular regulation, like European clients that want the data to just remain within the European Union, then we give you instances so that you can deploy all of the stack in the European Union and connect to APIs of language models that are hosted in the European Union through Azure
Okay.
AWS.
So basically, you can host Stack AI on-premise
Yeah.
for customer. Okay, this
On-premise,
is very
on cloud, on
interesting.
private cloud, all
Okay.
these options.
But is it not too complicated to take all of those factors into account when you are a first-time AI founder? Like, don't you want to first conquer the US market, abide to its regulations, and then maybe move later on to the European market and comply with all those regulations? What do you think?
I would say like I wouldn't limit our growth just by technical considerations. I think it's important to be mindful of who you're targeting. For instance, we're very much focused on targeting the US, but we're not gonna say no to a customer in Europe just because they have some regulation on how they must handle data. Because if that's the case, we feel very comfortable. If we can much more easily capture market that may be unsatisfied by these solutions. And quite frankly, all of these other regulations you have to go over are really well documented on what you have to do to make them work. And most of it, of the work really is operations you have to do on your end, so that you have the DevOps in place, so you can deploy whatever you want, how you do it. But if you build that infrastructure well, maybe not in day one, but after you have 1 year in operation, you can then expand much faster and not be constrained by that.
Okay. And actually, I have like usually when YC companies are known to be a very like verticalized, you know, like on a specific problem for a specific industry, and I think I feel like that's not really what you're doing, because you said that you are basically making a software that can be used by many industries. So I'm just wondering, how do you grow, and how do you make sure you can reach out to the right customer when you target so many types of customer? That's a question I'm particularly interested about, as because like Jonathan and I are also like created a service company integrating AI, and we are also like targeting all industries, and that's a question we often ask ourselves. So I'm curious to know what you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that actually the mistake is to think that we target every industry. We have seen much more success when we go to in industrials, when we go to financial services and healthcare, because we can target very well to what they care about. We don't target tech, we don't target, let's say, textiles as an industry customers. And by nature of that, what we do is that we can serve them very well. Another thing I will mention is that because we specialize in back office automations, the back offices of enterprises tend to be quite similar across industries, meaning the back office of a hospital and the back office of a bank are not that different on the set of processes they need to go over and the set of things that clog data that are bottlenecks for the operation. So by designing our platform to be targeted on focus on those processes, we can more easily kind of like serve these industries together. But by no means we try
So,
to serve everybody or everybody. We for sure wouldn't go and serve a startup or serve a coffee shop or to serve a solopreneur, for which there are much better platforms like Zapier, so that designed for that market.
when you target each new company or each new sector in healthcare or finance or construction or industry, what you go to see them is just what's your sales process today? It's just you go to say, hey, that's what we did for like other healthcare companies or other companies, or do you just like do like tailor-made AI agents for them? Like, what's the way of selling for you
So
as like
for us,
AI?
most of our growth is through inbound. We have a lot of content and a lot of people that write about us, and we create a lot of like use cases and tutorials to show how to use the platform. And that naturally attracts traffic of people that want to do similar things. The moment that they
Okay.
want to do it, they book a demo with us. We show them the platform, how it works, and then we sign a contract with them for them to try and do a pilot program with them. We have to make it very accessible on the pilot program, so they don't have to invest more than $10,000 to pilot it, at least if they don't have intense security requirements. And then after that, we'll expand that to a full deployment once they have more use cases deployed in production.
Okay. And
Yeah.
so like what's the sales process? You say if you go to see a bank or a healthcare company, because I know we talked about GDPR earlier, but like it's very difficult, especially like in Europe, to sell those kind of like workflow automations to those companies. So like do you go see them with like your specific use cases? Again, like I know you kind of
Again, we
answered
work with
that, but
inbound, so they come to us. But so what we do is, when a company comes to us, we try to first understand what is their use case. Do they have an immediate need for this? Do they have the budget to pay for this? And does it have value for the actual operation? And if these criteria are met, we tell them, okay, you can build it with Stack AI. We give them a demo of how to build it because it's very quick. And then they buy the software. Again, we're a B2B SaaS providers, like enterprise SaaS software providers. So we just sell them a software. We don't sell any service or anything on top of that. They can usually figure it out themselves. And we just like give them support
okay.
and onboarding how to use it.
Just another question, because like when people invest in Stack AI, like companies, let's say I'm a client, I go to Stack AI, I just want to automate something. Is your pricing gonna like, how do you like make a sale, like force a sale? Like, is it based on the return on investment, like the time spent for the task? And you just say, hey, you pay this guy like X per month. So this guy's gonna be, if you pay us the same amount, it's gonna be the same, but you have to go through AI to AI is the present now, so you have to go to the tech end. So like giving this task to an employee, or like how else does like
I mean, it's not that complicated. You tell them, hey, the software costs this much money. You want
Okay.
the more seats, this is the price per seat. Oh, this is that you want this much more usage, the price per usage. But or you want more security, this is the price for this additional security. You want single sign-on, this is the price for single sign-on. And you can select those features to determine the price. Like we try to match like the value of like the what you get from the platform with the value that they will get from those processes, but we don't try to over-engineer too much that pricing in general. Like it's
Okay.
more focused than anything
So
else.
keep it simple.
Yeah, for sure. Keep it simple, especially for your team in general. Tell them like, look, this is if the company is gonna have this many users, this is what it costs. If they have this many users, this is what it costs, and then you have just a
So you have
menu.
like three plans, like enterprise, scale, and like start, or
Yeah, exactly. And in the end, and that's the way that you make sure that everything is objective and easy to repeat. It is repeatable.
okay. Was the pricing like decisive? Like, did YC like taught you to teach you a bit about the pricing, how to price your software, or did that just come along the way? Like,
We
also.
discovered our way, to be honest. I think it's very hard to like get pricing right the first day. I think you need to try a lot of things. Most startups undercharge a lot for their products because they're not aware of the value that the product gives. Let's say a company may be saving $3 million in compliance expenses just by using your product. So you should charge proportional to that value in some sense. And in many cases it will be less. So I guess that this is one of the benefits of working with specific industries that you can more easily try to understand those parameters. But overall it's relatively easy to map the value of an LLM request to a particular task. And it's something we spent a lot of time with was understanding that as we grew kind of like past the $1 million in ARR and to repeating our enterprise growth motion.
So, yeah, listening to your like story since we started, we feel like it's all gold and perfect. So maybe can you describe us like what if did you make any mistakes like since you started, and what basically if you had to start all again, like do you believe that there will be something that you will do differently?
I mean, everybody makes mistakes. We make a ton of mistakes. I feel like one mistake we did at the beginning was not being very clear about what kind of company we'll be targeting. That meaning that at first we were very open to serve startups, to serve enterprises, to serve small businesses, to serve agencies. When in reality, what that happens, that it's what it does is that even if they all want your product, they're all gonna pull you in different places because customers are gonna pull you towards what they want. So I feel like much earlier on, we should have been more decisive on which customers we wanted to serve and just follow their pool. And of course, keep the platform open if other people want to use it, but follow the pool of one customer. I think that's something we should have done from the beginning. Also, we should have focused much more in like tailoring our messaging from the beginning. I think that's something that we assume it was figured out, but I think we should have experimented much more from day one. And use that to replicate our to make a much more scalable, repeatable motion that we could then outsource to employees or so. Otherwise, it comes and charge you later. What else? Document, I mean, for onboarding people, document everything you do in your business for like paying people to like setting up some software for like importing a new library forever. Document everything because otherwise, whenever someone else joins, it's gonna be a mess. So making as much documentation as possible is super important. And what else? For salaries, negotiations, for everything that is related to equity, whatnot, have two reviews per year or one review per quarter, such that if an employee tells you, hey, I want a salary increase or a raise, tell them, hey, there's a review per quarter. Wait for the review. We can talk about it by then. But that way, there is a lot to see. So yes, there's a lot of resources out there
Okay.
and learning. There's a very good book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by
Yeah, but no rates.
It's a good book. I think the problem is that it's like the kind of book that if you read it as an early stage founder, you will think that it's not valuable. It's not applicable at all for you because you don't have anybody under you. And by the moment that you have the problem, it's already too late. So it's tricky. It has a very good talk online, which you can kind of like summarizes the book in 1 hour. And that helps a lot to understand kind of like those trade-offs you're going to have. But it's very real that those things have an impact in the company. And those things have an impact on how happy is your team going to be, how motivated they're going to be, and how much are they going to like refer to other people to work with you? Because those are the things you really want as you grow, to like have the best people and have people work with you, be very happy and excited. So they're gonna put their best effort, and use those best efforts to take you to take the business to the next level.
Do you think the offsites in Miami are the keys to excite future employees?
Maybe. I mean, we do an offsite per quarter, and the people love that because they get to meet the rest of the team who may be remote or maybe in a different city, get to know each other. Doesn't have to be Miami. We do our offsites here in the Bay Area, and they're super excited. To be honest, a lot of our employees have the Silicon Valley dream, and they love when we rent a house in Palo Alto and we just like are hacking all day together. I mean, that's what a startup really is fun about. That's why I wanted to be a startup. I wanted to have that life, and they love that. So what we did a retreat in Madrid last September. We did a retreat in Boston last March in MIT actually. So yeah, we have put our efforts up. We get to show them kind of like the startup life, to everybody, even if they're not here in SF.
How many
Yeah.
employees do you have now?
We are
It's like
16
a
right now.
16.
16.
16. Okay. Okay. Amazing. So, can you share? Now, I know that it's kind of a disclosed thing, but like you just raised your Series A. Is that right?
Yes.
With Stack
Yeah,
AI.
indeed.
Amazing. When did you close the round? Last week?
No,
Like
we
this?
closed it in September, not last week. Otherwise, I'll be
Okay.
very busy right now. But I mean, I'm very busy right now. But right after the round, you need to catch up on a bunch of stuff. So no, we closed it in September, and yeah, we've been delivering things done. We actually, when we closed the round, we were six people in the team, and we very quickly ramped up and got more engineers, more people to run back at the go-to-market, and do so while remaining very conscious about our burn and growth.
And how do you keep the balance between hiring like engineers and sales, and like do you hire one engineer for one sale, or like
Not really. I mean, we
what's
hire
like the
based on
main
what we
challenge
need.
of
For us,
what?
it's based on what we need. Once we like me and my co-founder are very good at doing something, and we know that this thing is gonna have to be done a ton of times, we hire someone to do it. Let's say my co-founder and I, we were the two only person people in the company for the first 6 months. We didn't hire anybody. We said, okay, we're spending a lot of time doing front end and back end. We're doing some sales. We're spending a ton of time doing all these operations, compliance. Let's get someone to help us with that. So we got our first hire, which it wasn't unusual for hire. It was an MBA from MIT that wanted to work with us, and he helped us a lot to like both code a big part of the platform, messaging, blogs, content, but also build a lot of processes we had for managing communication generally, managing documentation, doing a lot of the compliance for us to be SOC 2 and HIPAA compliant, and security around that. After that, we realized that our biggest bottleneck in use was the front end of the product. For anybody that is learning how to code, learn how to do front end very quickly, and how to do authentication, how to build full stack applications, because really it's a powerful skill. And we found a full stack engineer who, by the way, now he's actually beginning his own startup, and now he's doing Y Combinator right now. Our first
I think I've
hire,
seen
Javier.
it.
Yeah, no, he's very cool, and he joined with us, and he was just a machine, instead of helping us pick things up. And we actually didn't grow for a long time. We didn't get our fifth hire until March last year. And then the sixth hire came in June, July. And then that's when we started doing the Series A. And then once we had enough, say, engineering people, and we realized that most of our time was spent doing sales calls, we said, okay, we need to get someone that can start taking some of our sales inbound. So we hired our first growth hire, who was initially a sales development representative. He's kind of like an SDR growth. And we tasked him on that, not only with doing marketing and doing growth campaigns, but also taking some of the calls. And then we hire an account executive, someone that could operate, manage, and close some of the deals from the email we're receiving. Since then, we continue developing, hiring engineers. We realized, okay, we need to scale out some of the front-end development. We got some really good front-end engineers, a pretty good design engineer who could clean the platform, make it look great, a really great back-end engineer that could help us make everything just run smoothly and full stack operationally, and a couple
Are
full
you
stacks that could be able to operate and maintain features end to end.
And what about like all the product managers, strategy and operation managers? Do you think those roles will still be relevant in the
Yeah,
future?
those roles only make sense when you have 100 people or more. Like a product manager, you are supposed to be using the product every day, so you are the product manager.
Yeah, I think at the early stage of a company, see you either contribute to sales or tech. It's either one or two.
Both of them. Exactly. You do the idea in both of them, tech and sales, if you're a founder. Probably is everybody should be touching the product somehow in Stack, and everybody should be talking to customers somehow.
Yeah, either as a sales or a tech. But yeah, I think that's the goal. And what's your playbook to like delegate stuff?
Good question. I mean, the playbook, it's quite simple. Know how to do it yourself very well first. And then you can delegate to someone else. And then when they tell you it's gonna take 10 days, tell them no, it's not. Because I know how to do it, and it takes 3 days. So that's how you delegate stuff. That's like, yeah, the way you do it. You're gonna delegate sales. You need to say close a lot of deals. When they tell you, oh, it's gonna take 4 months, you tell them no, it's gonna take 2 months or a month. Why? Because I close many customers like this, and I know exactly where they get locked and whatnot, and that it's like this.
I know, Bernardo, you have to leave soon. So I wanted to wrap things up with the following question. I wanted to hear what your thoughts about the future of the space, and especially, which startups will be relevant 10 years from now, because nowadays there are so many startups that are building in a space, but bigger players like OpenAI might disrupt them in a matter of weeks or months, as we have
Yeah.
seen. And also, what is your take on raising money in the AI space? Especially, recently we've seen with DeepSeek that you don't need to raise hundreds of millions to be a significant player.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. And so, I mean, it's very hard to know what's going to happen with the market, but to give my two cents, I don't think AI is particularly different from any software that we have seen in the past. I think that it's just a new form factor for interacting with data and tooling, which allows you to automate a lot of what wasn't automatable in the past. Either because in the past we didn't have the tool, the algorithms for that, or they weren't robust enough. Really, that's what software, what AI provides for you. So I for sure see language models getting better and better. I have no shortage of that we're gonna have what people call AGI in a couple of months or years. In my opinion, AGI is already here. People just know how to prompt it well. That's really a bit of a blocker. People know how to prompt language models, but and I think people are gonna become much more savvy on how to interact with it. If when I look at a lot of like the tooling, I look at DeepSeek. Really, DeepSeek R1 and GPT and kind of like o1 are very good understandings of how prompting impacts LLMs, and having an understanding become a part of the fine tuning of the LLM or the training of the LLM, which is what DeepSeek and o1 do. And that's the reason why they can put these reasoning processes in parallel pipeline and make it so efficient, because they found, oh, it's not really about training the LLM from scratch, where it's a challenge right now. It's about how to know how to give it instructions and context so that it can come up to the right answers and conclusions. And that's what they did very well at. So I expect it to keep getting better, people being better at using it. I expect to see a lot of players showing up that can automate every micro task you'll see in the field. Just like when the App Store came out, I mean, back then we had a ton of apps that could do everything for you, and then it kind of collapsed into like a few aggregated apps that could like do all those things in one place. I kind of expect to see that in the world of AI agents. We will see a plethora of AI agents showing up everywhere, a Cambric explosion of AI agents in some sense. And probably we'll see as natural selection where like only the ones that are very critical for a business will remain, or most of the other ones we are getting on these platforms where we exist, which is what we're trying to do. I have no shadow of doubt that a company building an AI agent platform will become a $100 billion profit net income company very in the next few years. I'm pretty sure someone's gonna be that winner. We want to be that winner, so we're putting all the eggs to achieve that. And yeah, in terms of raising money really is the consequence of good work. So if you build something people want, or you have an idea of something people want, you have proof of that, you're gonna raise a seed round. If you have a good team, you're gonna raise a pre-seed round. If you have good traction of like people using that, and you have like proven that there's a business behind it, and you can repeat that business, you can raise Series A, and it goes on and so forth. So really towards raising money doing that. Perhaps my only advice for raising money is that raising money is a waste of time. It just spends percent your full time doing that. So I wouldn't recommend doing it more than for 2 weeks in a row. And the moment you're doing it, just do it days back to back all day until the round is closed. And then you can go back to work as normal. All right.
All right. Thank you very much, Bernardo. I see we're already out of time, so thanks a lot for your time. It was a
Absolutely.
very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Before we leave you, if you have any maybe a last advice to our audience.
Work very hard and learn math and physics. That's the most important advice. And I literally like I work very hard. That there's no shortcoming. You need to work really, really hard. And so not to be lazy.
Okay, thank you
Yeah.
very much, Bernardo.
Amazing, of course.
Thank you.
Cheers.